Hello and welcome to another episode of 10,000 Hours. I'm Grant Spanier.
And I'm Vince Cochi.
Thanks for being here, Vince. It's so great to hear your voice.
Hey. Great to hear yours, Grant.
Thanks, Vince. And you're listening to episode 47 of the show with David Schwen, a.k.a. D. Schwen. Super exciting Minneapolis dude that I'd been wanting to connect with for a while. And he did not disappoint. He was so great.
It was awesome, and we had the pleasure of having him in studio,
yeah.
So that always makes for an even more fun experience. We can see the look on each other's faces.
It totally changes the game. It's like way more, you can just feel the vibes. It's not like, there's less talking over each other. It's just like, it's so good.
Yeah,
two in a row, right?
It's
we
nice.
Just had Art Crank, and now we just have D. Schwen. Art Crank was episode 46.
We're on a roll.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep.
I think we're going to break
and
that
speaking
streak.
Speaking of looks and vibes, we talked about, I think, a really cool topic. It's aesthetic and cultivating your personal aesthetic, what it means, how it can influence your creative projects overall, building a name for yourself through a cohesive look. And if anyone has an aesthetic, it's definitely D. Schwen.
Oh, yeah, totally. It's worth looking at his work. I think it's just dschwen.com. Follow him on Instagram, too. He posts these amazing series, and they're delightful. And it really makes my heart happy. He's so good.
Absolutely, man.
Yeah, and his art is maybe what has inspired the sponsor, but not so much a sponsor this week. Being that it was a Minneapolis guest who has a little bit more influence, I think, in the community, we wanted to give this sponsorship slot to an organization called Art Buddies. I recently had been in some silly, like, manuary competition. I chose them as my charity, and I had just met up with them last week in person finally, and they're so good, and the organization is so cool. It's called Art Buddies, and basically what they do is they take a group of creative mentors, you know, agency people, artists, whatever, and then they pair them with inner city kids at two different schools in Minneapolis, and they basically mentor these kids and do an art project with them after the school day, once a week for the semester. And it's so cool, and I feel like it can have such a big impact on a kid. And beyond that, the funny thing is, you know, it's the connections, I think, that get made with the mentors and with the adults, and it's just a lot of good vibes. So I think they're looking for volunteers right now for the spring semester. So unfortunately, you'll have to be in Minneapolis to volunteer. But if you are, I definitely think you should check it out and at least consider joining or maybe pass it along to somebody else who would be a good fit for this. I've heard it's very fulfilling, and I'm hopefully going to get in. I don't think I can do spring, but perhaps in the fall. And if you want to check them out.
Man.
Yeah.
So good. I've had coworkers at Yamamoto.
Oh, really?
Volunteer. They said it was really rewarding. The kids are great. The organization's great. And you get to do something good. You get to give back. So it's,
totally.
It's nice.
And I think you get so much from that, you know. So check them out, artbuddies.org. Go Art Buddies.
And go Art Buddies.
Go D. Schwen. Go the Minneapolis love. It's so real right now.
Absolutely. Great episode. Go you guys for listening. Yeah. I hope you guys enjoyed as much as we did making it happen. Episode 47, Aesthetic. Like our guests to kind of buy in and ship us out of the episode.
Yeah, yeah. Subscribe to the cult of 10,000.
Yeah, exactly. Cut your palm and shake hands.
Sweet, sweet baby Vince. Could you maybe just start us out and tell me what you're working on?
I would love to. Busy at the office and at home. I am working closely with you on my new portfolio, new website, and my new brand identity, which, by the way, I love.
Fun. Yeah, Vince and Repeat,
my Twitter handle for a long time, and now my darling co-host and close personal friend, Grant, has made me a logo, which looks awesome. I can't wait to show it off. So working on that work, I am working on the Minnesota Children's Museum annual gala.
Oh.
Which has...
I think it's a gala. Just FYI.
I'm pretty sure it's a gala. So it's a little bit of party planning, which I think is a lot of fun. In my other life, I'd be a wedding planner. I love weddings, and I love like
that would suit you.
Hey, thanks, man.
Yeah.
So that's keeping me busy as well. And the show, obviously.
Yep.
Getting really kicking into
gear. Some fun apps. Yeah.
Yeah.
Kicking
for sure.
It off.
Yeah,
for sure.
Rolling. So that's keeping me busy. Grant, please.
Yeah, sure.
Reciprocate and tell me what's
Well, obviously,
me busy.
I'm working on your stuff. As was implied. And got some other stuff in the works. Submitted a couple of treatments for some video projects that I'm really excited about. Launched a Skillshare course today, but if you're listening to this, that'll be like 4 weeks later. So go check it out.
It's exciting. We'll show notes it.
Yeah,
we'll pretty cool.
Yeah, besides that, just jamming. Trying to stay happy, I think, is honestly been like a full-time job right now in this weather. I just like,
oh my
I'm
gosh.
Like, I've hit the dip.
The seasonal affective disorder
is
real. Oh my goodness.
But here's what I will tell you, Vince. What can help with that seasonal affective disorder is getting together with people in person.
Cool, interesting, invigorating,
yes, and having some
people.
Good conversations. And once again, now I think this is our third in studio.
Yes, and hopefully start of a trend because I'm having a blast.
Absolutely. And so I've been following this dude's work for a while. Super excited about it. I put him in sort of like a class of people that I like really dig their stuff and definitely been an inspiration as I'm coming up and trying to figure out, you know, what my style is, what I want to do. Real good. A pioneer? I want to call it. I'm going to give him Pioneer. Look at that.
We got an in-studio handshake, folks.
In-studio handshake. I think that's a first. We've done high fives before. I think we do the high five because it's a little bit more...
You can
some
hear
audio.
It.
Yeah.
This is
it's a visual gag that has some audio, but the handshake is just...
Without further ado.
Yeah, Mr. D. Schwen.
What do you
want? I mean, principal, creative director, founder...
I think
CEO,
all the above.
President. Yes.
No, it's all those combined into one.
Yeah. Lots of hats in that sort of situation.
Yeah. No, it's going great though. So it's really fun.
Good.
To,
hey, thanks for joining us, by the way.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah, well, I mean, so basically, like, sort of designer, illustrator, creative director style. Is that encapsulate it?
Yeah, yeah. No, that pretty much covers it. You know, trying to handle everything and
Nice. Hey, do me the personal honor of telling us what has been keeping you busy lately.
I have been busy with a lot of video work, and I think that comes from a lot of, you know, videos that I've been making for, you know, social media for brands and clients, and, you know, everything spirals and more projects keep coming, so,
That's cool.
It's like a hydra, right? You cut off one head and two grow back.
Yeah, I guess.
Exactly.
Greek mythology reference.
You post one, and then just more things come out of it, but it's great. It's fun. It's, you know, I really enjoy what I'm doing, so it's... That helps a lot.
That's good. So, yeah.
That's almost everything.
Congratulations.
Yeah.
I think that's a decent segue. You know, you're saying you have brands coming to you for, you're doing social media campaign style stuff and video stuff. And I think really that comes from our topic today, which is aesthetic and kind of, you know, where does style come from? What is style? What is it? You know, we talk about like finding your voice with Susan Bennett.
Absolutely.
We talk about like, you know, inspiration.
Clearly, you have a cultivated style. You have a very pronounced aesthetic. And it's that reason, among others, that people and companies seek you out for your work. Do you think that's at least partially true?
Yeah, I think there's definitely something to that. I think it's interesting because I fought finding a style for so many years. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of designers feel the same way. They don't want to get pigeonholed in one certain aesthetic or one certain style. So I think I fought it for so long. And then the thing that I've always held key is like finding a concept. Mm. So like no matter what, whether it's like cut paper or it's like, you know, making stuff out of household objects or whatever it is, as long as there's some sort of concept that holds it together, like that's kind of what is key for me. So
yeah, no, absolutely. I think that's like a classic thing we've talked about, which is like, it's just execution, right? But if it doesn't have an idea, then it's like... It's kind of empty.
It rings a bit hollow.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, for sure. I definitely want to come back to a lot of things you just said. It was packed pretty tightly. But before we go too far, I know Grant and I have talked about what we kind of feel is your personal aesthetic. But I think what would be much more useful and interesting to our listeners is for you to talk about what you think your personal aesthetic is.
Yeah, so I think a lot of the stuff that I make is, you know, created out of, you know, whether it's objects people are very used to, iconic things. Sometimes it's pop culture, sometimes it's food. So it's a lot of things that people can relate with and, you know, resonate with. Mm-hmm. So I feel like it's really attainable for like an audience to kind of get into it. And I think that that helps, yeah. You know, cause people can see like how, oh, maybe they can make something like that. Or, you know, it's not so far out there that they don't feel like they can, you know, get close to it. So I think mm-hmm. that helps like bring people in and.
Absolutely. You know, I think what I mean, coming as from someone without a design background, I felt like your work is very accessible. And there's a high level yeah. of accessibility and familiarity within the stuff that you did, which mm-hmm. appealed to me. Mm-hmm. I don't know, Grant, if you want to.
Yeah, no, I mean, well. we that's definitely something we even talk about. Like, I've done quite a few naming projects with you. And something we like to think about is it's nice to take an existing like construct that someone has and then add a little bit of a twist.
Right.
Because they already know this, and then now you add like another layer of recognition.
Right.
And so I think that's like kind of what you're getting at, and I think that's what makes it interesting and accessible and like nuanced.
Yeah, yeah. And I feel like a lot of the stuff that we use is visual language. Uh-huh. So it's creating these icons, these things that everybody is instantly can be like, oh, I can relate to that. But then you like twist a little bit and you know, spin it on its head mm-hmm. and make it something else. So it's, you know, people are like, oh, I've never seen it in that light. So it's something a little bit interesting.
Totally. And where my head is jumping right now is just, it's the first thing I was thinking about the camouflage series that you've done. And right. I want to know so you have Pantone pairings, you have the camouflage.
Yeah, there is Lego stuff. There's a long list of, I created a Lego Instagram account.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Which is still, I have not posted him in a while.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm going to bring him back and he'll be a zombie or something. Because he's been gone, he's been absent for almost half a year.
Yeah.
But then I did these rechargeable fruit series where I made these fruit that were, you know, half eaten. And then I would plug it in with an Apple iPhone and it would come back to be a full fruit. Yeah, there's a lot of different series.
So, but what I like about that stuff is it's like creativity thrives under constraints a lot of times, you know?
Right.
And it's just like finding those guardrails. But when I was thinking about that camouflage, you were saying the visual language, and it's like the first one that jumped into my mind was the Dark Side of the Moon one you had done, right? And so it's like you're taking an image that is like, you know, part of pop culture,
yep.
and now you're adding in your like little bit. Your little like nuance into
right. Yeah, no, I think that that helps, like, especially with pop culture, because people can relate. They know like that iconic image,
mm-hmm.
and then when you add it with this concept that, you know, like you said, has these guardrails of, you know, having this camo blend into whatever environment it's mm-hmm. in, it just having that little reference of being on a Pink Floyd.
Yeah,
know,
so there are like three things at work there. There's one which is the first concept. Well, okay. There's like kind of the pun of it, right?
Yeah, camouflage. This is very obvious.
Yeah,
but
the ground floor.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. And then you have the like that construct, and then you're applying that to a whole nother an existing visual construct or something like. It doesn't have to be like a Dark Side of the Moon, but you know.
Right.
So I guess my question would be, when you have ideas, when you're thinking about these sorts of things. Like, what does that process typically look like? Or do you test it? Do you, like...
Yeah, it really depends on each different, like, series or each project. Yeah. Like, because, you know, when I'm coming up with these projects, it's whether I'm, like, walking down the street, I'm in this space where I'm not really focused on, like, what's happening on my phone, or I'm just, like, everything else is turned off, and that's when these ideas come to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like when I write these things down, a lot of the times they don't get made right away. So for the camouflage series, I wrote it down like it could have been over, you know, a couple of years ago. But then I finally like revisited it. I'm like, oh, I could make this now. Like it's time, and I feel like I can make this into a series, and it could be really fun, you know. And I found these toy camels on eBay. I bought about six of them and started mm-hmm. painting them and making them, you know, blend into their environments. And that's just kind of how it happened. So
yeah.
Man, there's actually a lot of stuff. There's like a lot 12, of layers of wrapped into there. I'm going to try to constrain myself. First of all, I didn't know. Did you hand painted those camels to match their backgrounds?
Yeah, yeah.
That's awesome. We'll show notes what we're referencing. Yeah. It's a pretty cool project.
Dschwen.com or Dschwen?
Yeah, yeah. It's
and that's even more impressive. I thought that was all digitally done. So actually awesome.
It was all hand done.
So that's a talk about craft and purposefulness in the actual medium of mm-hmm, work and mm-hmm. all that. But let's eschew that for a moment to go back to something you said originally. And this is part of a two-part follow-up question.
Two-part follow-up.
I apologize in advance. You mentioned that as a designer, you kind of fight for a long time getting quote unquote pigeonholed into a certain aesthetic, a certain way of doing things. when did you make the decision, and what did that decision look like to finally kind of steer into the curve and accept the fact that you did have a style? You did have a way of speaking.
Yeah, I feel like that started back in college when everybody was starting to have their own, you know, set style that they were starting to work with, and they, whether it was hand-drawn things or, you know, painterly things. But, you know, I kept fighting it for so long, and then finally I think it was when I started my Make Something Cool Every Day project I started to experiment with all these, like, different, like, mediums, and that kind of just became a style in a way, because I was just making things out of, you know, all these different mediums, and it just became this style, even though it's not like a set style. It's like, it's not, I'm not just using paint, I'm not just using clay, I'm not using all these things, but in, you know, instead, like, you just see it all together and you know that it's...
But there's a bit of a... Okay, so one question. Did you do that at the same time as Brock? The
same that year? That was after Brock.
Okay, yeah, okay. Yeah. Either way.
Just the year after.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of the things you were saying there are, like, reminiscent of Brock in terms of approach.
Right.
Just like... Like, when I think of Brock, it's like, you know, whether it's in that project or not, it's like observational, finding everyday things, reapplying them, combinational, like, kind of just being, like, turned on to the world, you know, like, and turned off to the other stuff. And then it's just this observation that happened very differently.
Right. It's an interesting thing when you start one of those projects, because you're just, you have no client, you have free reins, and you're just making stuff on your own. And just the ability to experiment and find your own, like, ways of making things and coming up with, you know, a series or concepts. It's very liberating and it's great.
Yeah.
And so. It sounds like it. I'm really glad that you answered it in that way, because it illustrates an important point. It's that aesthetic doesn't, as classically defined, need to refer to a specific medium or a specific visual style. Yeah. It's an approach more than anything.
Totally.
It's your fundamental way that you address a creative problem. And that's something that you do that crosses mediums, and that's what an aesthetic really is.
Oh, yeah. And it's interesting right now, especially with, like, I mean, the reason. So right now I would call myself a writer director, you know, but like, why can I do that? You know, it's because what is it? Mediums don't matter so much. It's just like, you know, you can apply your voice or you can apply an idea across different stuff. It's like really exciting right now.
Right. That's why it's so hard to just have like a set title, because you can have so many different hats when you're, you know, working on things and just, you know. Why just get stuck in one area? So
absolutely, yeah. I think the day of the title is fading away. It's going to be a relic in a few years. But
yeah, you know, I've been seeing more and more, like, younger people, like, just throwing creative director on there. You know what I mean? Which it's sort of misappropriated, but not really. I mean, it isn't. But it's just, I think it is just, like, speaks to the broadening.
It's just because there's no good term for creative thinking person who can kind of do a little of everything.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Creative director works.
Yeah, it's fine. Fuck
more
it.
Or less.
Fuck it. Roll on.
I did have a part two, and I guess this is
we got part one.
Yep.
Okay. Good.
Part one addressed.
I'm gonna check that.
Moving
this
on.
This is the time of the episode where I play devil's advocate almost ubiquitously. So I, as a writer, have experienced this, and I want to know from both of you guys if this is something that happens in the world of design and art. There's kind of a dichotomy. There are the people who want good work, and even the people who do good work are saying, find a distinct voice, have a manner of speaking that speaks to you, but also you have to be a chameleon. You have to be able, to be a good writer, you have to be able to write in a myriad of ways. You have to tell a variety of stories for a variety of people. Is there a disconnect there? Am I just conflating things? And does this problem exist in design?
Oh, all right. So what's your question?
My question is, do you ever feel that pull of, I need to have an aesthetic because it's
so
a stamp,
having a voice,
it's a brand,
having a voice versus
being able
being
to be flexible? Yeah.
I mean, there's definitely ways to have a voice. And, you know, the thing that you speak about with having different, like, being able to be a chameleon, and that relates to different clients, different brands you work on. Because, you know, you might work on some food company, and then you turn around and you have to work on, like, a technology company. Obviously, you're going to have to adapt to those different, like, needs of those, you know, brands. And I feel like that's where the flexibility comes in. But, like, for me, like, to have my own voice, it's always bringing my ideas to the table. So whether those ideas conceptually come out one way or the other, like, the idea is always like driving for all those different ways that I'm like working on things. I don't know if you can relate to that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's like, it's, there's so many like things, right? And especially, I don't really have, like, we were talking earlier, we had like a guest, Nathan Yoder. I don't know what was he? Like 39, 38. Yeah. Okay. Do you know anything about his work at all? He's an illustrator out of Portland. Really great stuff, but it's all like hand style. It's he has a specific style that people like, or like a John Contino, like, you know, people come to him and they'll probably say, I want, you know, and all this stuff. It doesn't look like the same, but it looks in the same aesthetic. It's a very, very clear aesthetic.
Yep.
And something I struggle with for sure is what I was saying was, especially when I'm working with smaller scale people, budgets and things, it's like when I work with a bigger scale budget and a client, I have the room, the money really, which buys the time to experiment and to show a range.
Right.
But when I'm working on smaller scale stuff that requires more speed, I can't go as far and as wide, and I don't really have an established aesthetic. So they come to me because we have either a relationship or they like some work I've done, but most of the time they don't know exactly what they want. And it just like, it becomes this like weird, like balancing act.
That can
it's
be like, tough. Cause then you might not have like a go-to that they might be familiar with.
Yeah.
Or
But of course that is the freeing aspect of not having the aesthetic, which is they're not like, hey, give me this.
Right.
So but it's just like double-edged sword.
Yeah.
Dang it.
I know. The sword. Why can't there ever just be the one edge?
Just, we just need one.
Just once. Have you guys ever felt locked in by your personal aesthetic? Has it ever felt limiting? I know, because I know, speaking from my own personal experience, there have been times where I can tell that I slip into a certain voice that I use in my writing, and it has caused, I mean, not necessarily like consequences, but it's, I've had to break free of it, and it has caged me at points. So you know, I was wondering if it's true with you guys.
I think for me, it's more of like almost reverse, like where I've applied the lens of the person who's hired me or whatever too much. And so I've like almost not dumbed down, but like diluted my own voice because the thing that I want to say scares me, whatever, it, you know, like if, and then I realize usually it's like a coming back point because I realize like, I feel like my voice in general has a bit of like a humor and a bit of edge. And whenever I'm like pandering, that's when I realize it's like, you know.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think, you know, it's tough too, like when you try to have your voice and you try to like, you know, conform to the certain project or the brand, like you need to have that, the lens of like actually having this idea. And I feel like sometimes if I don't have the set style that I want to work with, it's kind of freeing because, you know, a lot of these times if I do feel like I'm setting this style or I'm setting this like way of doing things, that's where I create these personal projects. And I'm like, I need to try out painting. I need to try out this other medium or something that, you know, I can play around with these other styles that will work, you know, work on these other, you know, brands or projects or try to like free up, you know, kind of what you get stuck in. So,
yeah. We talk about like, finding like overlapping motivations for projects. It's like, if you want to try painting on a project, then like that's one lens you can look at it through and like keep applying them.
Yep.
Oh, we got
the rare mid-episode cough.
Throat.
You know what that means? I think lots of good talking, and it builds up. You get a bit of a gunk.
Yeah, I think we've been on a roll. So
yeah, yeah. Oh,
there you go. Do you want me to pat you on the back?
I'm okay.
We need the Heimlich.
Vinny, I'm curious. You kind of were hinting at it, but do you feel like you have an aesthetic as a writer? Or
yeah, absolutely.
Or aesthetic, I think, and voice separate, or what is that?
I don't think
is aesthetic, it like tone?
Yeah, I don't think aesthetic and voice are separate. I think it's just different ways to talk about the same thing, which is a very cultivated style, a personal style, right? I think I definitely threw, and this is the question that I'm going to parlay onto both of you next. I have a style and a voice that I think is inbuilt, and that I've definitely cultivated over my years as a writer, but it started out as something I didn't really choose. I didn't sit down one day and say, oh, I can really write in kind of okay in a variety of voices, but I really want to specialize in this one. It's just kind of the way I started writing. Mm-hmm. It's very conversational. It's very referential. I think it's kind of a casual tone. What I want to know from you guys is, were your personal aesthetics something that you think was native to you before you even started down the path of designer or filmmaker or what have you? Or was it something that you really consciously decided to cultivate?
Yeah, I feel like everybody has this, you know, these environment, you know, these different things, these experiences in their life that they draw from with their, you know, with all their creative work. And I feel like a lot of the work that I'm making somehow is inspired by that, you know, like growing up in this northern part of Minnesota, I used to like be in the art room all the time, making things out of clay, making like paintings, doing all these things. And I feel like those things like are coming out like later in life after going through art school, design school, you know, being in the advertising agencies for so long. It's interesting because I'm like almost coming back to my roots in a way. Yeah. So it's very much like that for me.
I would say that's probably like you're brushing away a lot of the crap that is piled on from society. I mean, for real though, it's like, and you're getting at a little bit of the truth that's underneath there. And I think the like outside view on your stuff is like, it feels playful.
Right.
It feels like it has like a sense of self-awareness and a playfulness, a bit of like a youthfulness.
Yeah, there's a lot of honesty to it. There's a lot of like, you know, playfulness to it. And I think that that helps. Like it just, you know, for a lot of these people that are coming to me, they're like, they might have taken a very serious route, but then they're like, you know, we see the stuff you're doing and it's really fun. It's playful.
It's fun.
We want to do something like that.
Right,
so
yeah.
It's great to have a client come to you and like have that like...
That's got to be rewarding. They come to you and they say, the reason why we like your work is because your personality is shining through the work.
Right.
And we like that.
Yeah.
What about like a double rewarding statement? Is that like, not only do we like what you do,
man,
we like that you are reflected.
That's a tough thing. I was just thinking about that. That's like tough to like...
It can
like,
be daunting at times. You know? Sometimes you're just like, well... Now the pressure's on, you know? It's just like, okay. I mean, I've definitely done that with one brand and worked really well, but, you know, you're a different brand, and I'll definitely work my magic, you know, with that. But, you know, sometimes it's a different beast, but, yeah.
Oh, man. I was just thinking about, like, from a filmmaking standpoint, like you have a Wes Anderson situation that is so hyper-stylized.
Right.
But the beauty of it is, like, when you think about any Wes Anderson film, it's like, there's like a dark edge to it for sure. There's like these dark undertones, but it's like ultimately like so like comedic and like
it's always lighthearted at its dry at its engine.
And so like to me that approach says, I mean, and he's working technically for himself, but you know what I mean.
Yep.
It's not a client, but still, it's the same idea. It's like, do you want to really embody that thing and like always be doing that, or do you want to be slightly more flexible? But here with the West Side, you could guarantee kind of that you're like always going to be doing stuff that's kind of
And it's
like fun to make.
That he loves to make, I'm sure.
Yeah.
So I feel like that's like a lot of the stuff that I'm doing is, you know, I love working on it. And I definitely do turn down some stuff just because it gets, you know, there's a lot of things going on and everything. But also because I know it's not the right fit. And so I feel like sometimes it's tough to do that. But at the same time, if I know I'm not going to bring my best to it, like, you know, I need to just be upfront and honest with them.
Yeah, wow. You have the imperative. Right?
I think you've both spoken to something very important, and that's a kind of an ingrained part of the conversation when we talk about personal voice, personal style, and cultivating that, is that there's a hidden benefit to having a very distinct personal style, is that you're always going to be passionate about doing work in that vein, and having a style will kind of self-select you against potential projects and clients.
Mm-hmm.
And so it saves you some of the heartache of working on something that you're not really passionate about.
Right, right. And I feel like that's the same thing with what I post to my site or the stuff that I'm posting on Instagram, is that, you know, these things are things that I really enjoy doing and I'm making, and I'm not just posting them just to post them.
Mm-hmm.
I'm posting them because, you know, I love to make it, but also, like, these are the things that I want to work on if other brands or clients come to me. So, it's,
yeah,
kind of works both ways.
Totally.
Yeah.
Well said.
Projected, and it comes back. But, okay, so one thing I want to get at, which is what we were sort of hinting at with talking about cultivating style and, like, where it comes from. And what I think about when I think about my own sort of style, and even really, when I talk about, like, I'm never going to be... Okay, guys. All right. I'm vacillating. I get it. We're jumping around here. But no, just personally, something I've said before is like, I'm never going to be the best at any one thing. but I might be like the most interesting combination of things. Like, yep. I'm never going to be the best illustrator, the best whatever, but I might do some novel things because I pull from a variety of sources and a variety of like skill sets. And so that to me then is, okay, like, what are your influences? What are your inspirations? Because to me that shapes a lot of it. And when you can find these like little nuanced like pockets of inspiration, I feel like that's where you can come up with some really cool shit, because you're just coming from a different angle that other people aren't, you know?
Right.
And then you're applying your own like existing voice on it.
Yeah.
So I'm curious, like, do you have any main inspirations, or like where you go for inspiration, or where you, like big so influences coming like, up, you know?
I mean, I just came this afternoon, like earlier this afternoon, I was at the Walker Arts Center in the bookstore. Ooh. Like, I picked up some books. God. And
I get so fucking angry there. I honestly, like,
seriously?
Yeah, I'm so mad because I want everything. I'm serious.
Oh, yeah.
The last time, honestly had to leave. I was like, I kept going. It's and just like sighing because everything's so fucking cool.
Right, no, but like, seriously. I love going into a bookstore like that and getting away from the internet, just shutting stuff off, like actually feeling books, looking through, you know, art, looking through work, like design, like trying to go to different areas like furniture design or like, you know, just pure art, just try to find like inspiration in those areas, because like that's the stuff that really influences me, because if I just go and look at like all the design awards or at advertising annuals, like, you know, it feels like a lot of it can become repetitive, and I just want to like find a new like way to get inspired. So that's why I'm always going to places like that. So
that's definitely worth noting, is that your aesthetic, your voice, your personal style is not just about your output. There's a personal style that goes into how you take in inspiration and take in inputs. Which I think equally influences the end product.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah. And something I'd written before was just like collect. Like, I feel like when people don't have decent systems, like you've got a bright orange Field Notes and a pen in your pocket, right? You probably typically have that.
It's always in my pocket.
Yes.
Unless it's like a particularly cold day and I have a sweater on top and I have to put it in my back pocket.
Yeah. Okay,
but no, it's like, fair. It's like always here with me. Okay. And, I'm always like jotting down notes.
Oh, nice. That's fun. Okay.
Nice.
I'm always jotting down notes, references. Ideas. So, but yeah, it's great. Like, because these things happen, like, they come to you in these, like, weird moments when you're riding the bus, or you're, like, your brain is shut off, you're just not thinking about other stuff, and, like, that's when I'm inspired the most. And, like, if I don't have this or my phone to write things down, then, you know, it would get lost, so, yeah.
Totally.
Man, creative loss. That's something we've talked about, and we'll probably have to, at some point, devote entire episode.
We should. It's the that's like more tragic than death.
And you can hear Grant's moans of both sadness and want to speak about the topic. But I think that's actually maybe as good a segue as any into what has nothing to do with anything that we've been talking about. Purposely so.
Misdirect.
I don't know how familiar you are with the format of this particular podcast program, but every week we like to break things
up.
I'll
find out.
Yeah.
Well, sure. I guess you've already, you know, you made it clear.
Okay. I guess you guess we will. Okay. We like to break things up every week with an off-topic topic, which has nothing to do with anything that we've talked about previously. And this week, looking at your work.
What a delicious topic.
Oh, yeah.
What a tasty off-topic.
Yes, especially your Pantone pairing. Referencing that correctly.
Good reference.
It made me think food, because it's food related. And then I saw a particular piece of your camouflage project that showed a burger in the background.
It's coming out. All right.
So today we're talking about best burgers.
The funny thing is, like, you thought we were like leading up to some like related thing, but
No,
that was it. Yeah, okay. No. We're talking about burgers.
We're talking about the best burger you've ever had.
Well, I thought you were going to talk about my burger fetish that I have.
Oh, whoa. That's what we're talking about.
That gets a little bit deeper, because
play that like Rasta
very
like sound
big
effect.
Burger thing, and a lot of the work that I've done, like,
we didn't
like
know,
when
man.
I'm figuring stuff out,
we really didn't
burger
know.
Related.
This is exciting.
All right, tell us what is
burger
a...
that I made.
Oh yeah,
so many other things.
Oh dude, oh my god, I remember that thing getting ripped off by some like agency. Sorry, we don't know that, but it was pretty. He did a great project. It was like Helvetica, tightened up Helvetica.
Yeah, it was all words typographic, sandwiches. But each it was like bun, cheese.
Yeah,
you know,
in the color of the.
Oh, that's cool.
We'll show notes that.
Nice, yeah, for sure.
Yeah,
but oh, that's awesome. Hey,
that's a fun project.
What does it mean to have a burger fetish?
I don't know. I feel like I love burgers, and I feel like a lot of the, like, sometimes I'm very inspired to make work for burger stuff. Another brand just came to me the other day, and they want me to, like, create this burger art, and I'm just like, fuck yeah, let's do this.
Like, you're, like, man. Frothing at the
moment. I'm trying to just be like, play cool, yeah. Like, all right, yeah burgers. Maybe. No, we can do that.
Burgers, right?
I don't know what it's from, but, like... Like I'm with these guys that go out with every once a month, and we go to this like try to find the best burger.
Wow,
in, like, burger!
This is amazing.
Wow, I can't believe how on point this hot topic is.
We actually have named the group that we go to, and it's called Between Two Buns. Oh,
wow. Is that a Between Two Ferns reference?
What's that?
Between Two Ferns reference or no?
Oh no!
Oh, all right. Wow.
It was just a weird, you know, name that was brought up on one night after too many beers.
Between a couple of buns. Yeah, there you go.
Awesome. I like it. I love it. Hey, yeah. Well, so you're more qualified than maybe anyone I've ever known. What's your favorite burger? What's your go-to? Man,
it's tough. Like, there's definitely like a top five list that I have.
Yeah.
Hit us with it.
I think Lavon is probably one of my top ones that I really love.
Is that in Minneapolis?
They have, yeah, it's in Minneapolis. Another great one is the Hot Dish Burger, North Country, Country. Also very good. We went to the Rookery, I think, last month. That has a very tasty tiny burger.
Oh, really?
It's a little burger.
It's hard for those not to be dry. Was it dry or was it good?
Well, it was good, but I just wanted like a couple others like after. It was very tiny. But no, like it's really great. Like this, the culture, the food culture here in Minneapolis, it's amazing. So like,
cool.
You find all these places that like, you know, create great food, and then when you find out that they create a great burger, you're even more excited, right?
Yeah.
Oh my god! Absolutely. Yeah. You're preaching, man.
It's such an iconic. It's like totally iconic.
It's so, it's like, Americana. It's very much in your aesthetic.
It's like a guilty pleasure.
Different spins on fun, something very referential. Right.
It's got an artistic element to it.
Yeah.
Oh. Man,
I think there's another burger series that might need to come up here soon. Yeah. So.
See, well, okay. If we talk about aligning motivations, like finding a way to like make a project out of eating burgers is maybe a good thing. Well, you kind of, or having a burger club.
Constraints breed creativity, right? And
it's true.
That's why a creative burger is almost more interesting than just a creative dish.
There was a sweet. Well, okay, it was actually not that cool. It was like GQ,
you're really selling it.
This GQ series, they do like most expensive shit with T-Pain or something, or
I'm not familiar.
No.
Okay, well, we'll show notes the particular episode, which was like the most expensive burger. It was like a $500 burger or something. It was really stupid.
Oh my gosh,
awesome!
But it was worth watching. It's just like
we've got some good ones. We'll actually show notes the locations of these burgers for local listeners who want to check them out. Grant, do you have favorite burgers?
Well, I feel like, okay, I tend toward, so I went to St. Thomas, and so I was in St. Paul, not too far from the Blue Door.
Oh, yeah.
Have you been?
Blue Door has a great burger.
Phenomenal.
I go to the one in South Minneapolis.
So. Oh, yeah, okay, which is awesome. I love that they have another location. Right. And, they have so many. They have a Miriam, and they have Blue Seas, right? I
mean, yeah.
And that's where it's at, like.
Right.
You didn't mention any Juicy Lucy's.
Oh, I love Matt's.
Matt, I've not been to Matt's.
Oh my god,
Matt's is a place. If like that's the I mean, Obama was there.
Right. Okay. So do you like Matt's more than Blue Door?
I think so.
Okay.
Yeah, I feel like it's so basic. It's just like the burger. It's you know they bring it to you. If you want to order fries, you order fries. But like it's so basic.
Shorter to grill. You can see them cooking.
Great.
It.
You can see it cooking. You feel the grease. Like it settles on your jacket. And, like,
adds
another layer to like keep warm in Minnesota.
So I'll take this opportunity quickly for those of you that are listening that don't live in Minneapolis.
Sorry,
we have a kind of a cultural mainstay called the Juicy Lucy that was pioneered here by debate.
There's an argument.
A variety of establishments claim that they invented it. The de facto inventor is Matt's Bar, who everyone kind of agrees is the original.
Well, it's, okay.
Except for the proprietors of certain other
establishments. Well, all right.
But anyway.
A controversial issue, and you say everyone agrees.
I mean, but the majority of people agree.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Anyway. So if you disagree, please write in
write in. P.O. Box 131.
Basically, how you make a Juicy Lucy is you take a burger and you fill it with cheese. You put the cheese on the inside.
Ah.
And so you got this molten, gooey cheese center. And it's phenomenal.
It really is.
Invented here in Minneapolis, and many local Proud establishments serve it. It's delicious.
Now I've actually perfected my own.
Wow.
So I make
it. Whoa, yeah, ladies and gents.
I have kids, and they feel that I am the best burger joint in Minneapolis.
Look at that. Right? So,
that has warmed my heart and made my stomach growl.
I feel like I'm filled with cheese. My center is cheesy.
And not to go too, like, America on this, but I also invented something that is becoming a household staple that the kids always request.
Please.
And we named it the brat with a sweater. Which is a brat that is wrapped with a hamburger patty.
Oh, grilled
and then eaten in a hot dog.
Oh,
pot.
Wow. Yeah. That's meaty and delicious. There you go. Hey, you won't offend me by making these meaty creations.
You
That's
heard
awesome.
It here first.
Meat with a sweater, Minneapolis's newest food creator.
Number two.
That's actually awesome.
Yeah.
So awesome. Grant, do you want to quickly...
Well, I mean, I got to check out Matt's. I've been meaning to for probably like 3 years at this point.
Great. As good as advertising.
I will say Blue Door like kills it.
Blue Door is great.
And they have a great Jiffy Burger. They have like a Miriam Park.
Yeah, the
Lucy,
peanut butter Jiffy Burger.
Yeah, peanut butter on there. They also have a non-menu item. Actually, maybe this will get to yours. I think I know what yours is. I'm not totally sure. But they have a secret menu item. They have tots and they have Cajun tots. The Buffalo tots. Order the Buffalo tots.
It's not on the menu?
It's not on the menu.
Ooh.
Please order them. If you ever go there again, it's like my fucking favorite thing.
I've had them through you, Grant, and they are phenomenal.
All right.
Phenomenal.
Seriously, man.
Red
Cow? Have you been to Red Cow?
Yeah.
Yeah. Red Cow's got some great burgers.
Great burger. Yeah. The Manhattan burger, I think.
Oh, yes.
So good.
They have like a cowboy one of some sort, too.
Yep.
Those are usually, those are a little, sometimes they can get a little crazy. Oh, okay. Final plug for like, you were talking about a simple American burger. I went to this place called Black Market in New York, and like, I have never seen, let's see, what's his name? Ryan Estmaker, Ryan and Tina, are you familiar with Great Discontent?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, okay. So Ryan, like, lost his fucking mind. Like, he honestly looked like a psycho person explaining this, like, this is the most American burger, and it's so simple, and everything is so perfectly, and it was just like, and I will say, like, I think his pitch is what kind of perception is reality.
Right.
But still, it was just like, you know what? I don't need fucking barbecue sauce. I don't need some crazy cheeses. Just give me that plain old American burger. Right.
American cheese, a lightly toasted bun.
Do it right.
Do it right.
Yeah.
And a Coca-Cola brand cola product.
I think I had an old fashioned. Yeah.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
Good.
You know, so you guys have like really touched hard on delicious local burgers.
Yeah, like the craft burger. Yeah.
I'm glad you did that. That's my favorite type of burger, and I echo many of your sentiments. I will take my opportunity to divulge? No.
Diverge. The rare moment where I have helped you out.
Yeah.
Typically, absolutely. I'm like, I'm sitting here like working through like 8 or 9 words. Like, hey, Vinny, did I use that right? Okay, wait. I'm looking for. Okay.
But no, you've definitely. Thank you, Grant. Thank you.
Hey, no worries.
I'm gonna go to two different places. One is a gourmet burger, something I'm usually not a huge fan of. The overdone, kind of like hyper done up.
The big time.
The burger that's almost no longer a burger.
The Guy Fieri.
I will give a shout out to the Vincent Burger from Vincent, the French restaurant on Nicollet Avenue in Minneapolis. Stuffed with short rib. Absolutely delicious. Ooh. You can get it on their happy hour menu at 9 p.m. So any...
I'm gonna have to add this to the burger list.
Yeah, couples looking for a delicious treat. It was
thanks
it was
to Vincent's
great.
For sponsoring this episode of the podcast. We really appreciate
and
it.
And it's a pretty good name, too, you see? right. No, but it's an awesome burger. Great. And a cool establishment. Check it out.
Oh!
What's the gasp?
Dude, is it 112 Eatery?
112 Eatery has a great burger. Oh. It's got brie
yes,
cheese.
Yes, I just remembered that.
Awesome. I've been there a few times, but I've never had the burger.
Yeah,
okay. It's a good burger. Friends of the show, Joyce, I fucking love those guys too. We should show notes them.
Show notes and Joyce.
Yeah.
I do want to quick point out an underrepresented in this conversation burger paragon, which is the fast food burger.
Yep.
And having a delicious fast food burger option is very important, at least to me.
It's very important.
We have a lot of good burger joints in the Midwest. We've got, Wendy's is throughout the country. I think that's a pretty good burger. Culver's, that's just in the northern Midwest. That's
the butter burger.
A very solid burger. Five Guys is getting more national popularity.
Sure.
Great burger.
What about a Hardee's?
Hardee's, I'm not a huge fan. But, I'm sorry, Grant. The favorite fast food burger I've ever had. Some say it's overhyped. Some say it's burger perfection.
But most say
In-N-Out.
But everybody says
In-N-Out Burger. In-N-Out Burger. We tried it when I was on a trip with you, Grant. Creatives Go West. And it was and still is the finest fast food burger I've ever had.
It's so good.
Phenomenal. Every animal time style.
I go to California, I need to make an In-N-Out.
See, okay, here's the cool thing. Here's the cool thing. Let me say this. This is just, it's kind of got like a Matt's Bar or like a thing, or we're talking about, you know.
It's got that short order vibe.
Ryan, or Ryan pitching me super hard on this like black market burger that it was like his favorite burger in the whole city. The mythology. It is so important, and it feels good.
Yes.
You go to In-N-Out, and people fucking love it, so you love it. It's like social proof. It's like, man, I think this is awesome, and then it is.
Couldn't have said it better myself. The hype was, you know, there's a certain point where the hype makes it like almost like impossible to succeed.
Yeah.
But if you keep going, the hype can make it impossible to fail.
Yes.
So, and that is the truth of In-N-Out Burger.
Hyper hype.
It tastes better because of the popular animal opinion stuff of it.
Yeah.
Had it that way, loved it that way, with a milkshake and fries, and I was in heaven, and I ordered it again the next day, and it was
phenomenal. Because we were staying in like Thousand Oaks in some motel.
In some Motel 6 in Thousand Oaks.
Like a block away from an In-N-Out.
Those are the best places to stay, because even if you're in a Motel 6, you're right next door to In-N-Out.
Yeah, absolutely.
We were just gobbling down In-N-Out in a crappy roach infested bed.
Editing some video on the road. What a delight, man. What a good trip.
That brings me back.
Ah,
and to bring us back.
Wow.
To the topic of conversation.
Sorry, I've got the meat sweats.
I know. I'm actually hungry. Haven't had dinner yet.
Yeah, dude. Okay, let me propose this. No pressure, but I think at some point, we'd love to get a burger with you, okay? I'm going to put that on the table.
Let's do it.
You know, oh!
Let's all do right. it. I it's accept. A
done deal.
Yeah.
I accept.
Expect a Google Calendar invite coming
we
up
will
shortly.
Do this.
For tomorrow.
Tomorrow
at
morning.
At like 10 a.m. Breakfast
burger. Brunch burger.
Okay.
To bring us back. And to give us some last thoughts on the concept and the topic of aesthetic and what does it mean, I would implore you to do as our many guests before you have done and answer two questions. And you can just answer these in order.
Yeah.
How can our listeners
don't fuck the order up.
support you, David Schwen? Two, if you would want our listeners to take one thing away from your time on 10,000 hours, what would you want that to be?
So how can they support me?
Yes.
Number I feel one. Like if they could support me...
What charity are you playing for today?
You know, there's a Kickstarter that I have started. I don't know. I feel like it's always great to like know when you're like doing stuff, you know, doing something that people appreciate, doing something that people can relate with. So just hearing that, you know, I think definitely helps, even though like
give them a like.
You're so like busy.
Give them a like on
just,
the page.
You know, just double tap the image.
Where can they find you? Yeah,
double
let
tap
them know.
On the Instagram.
Well, I will pitch your Instagram. I mean, it's like okay, because I bounce back and forth between like sharing, oversharing, not sharing. Right. But like, it's clear you're just like sharing stuff that's really cool.
Yeah,
and it's sometimes it's like it's really fucking good. I would follow you on Instagram. It's like you post really interesting stuff. So thank you for sharing that.
No, what's your Instagram handle so they can follow
it? It is Deschwen. So DSCHWEN.
Awesome.
Deschwen.
And if they want to see what you're working on currently, where can they find that?
That's usually found on there. So yeah. Current stuff.
And old projects, Deschwen.com.
Old projects, Deschwen.com is for all the... you know, final project sort of things. And yeah, so
great.
We'll stay on there.
Go buy a Pantone pairing, go buy a print.
Yeah. Do that. We have the shop up there.
Yeah.
So yeah,
I just
love that.
Like they're such delightful like pieces. Why would you?
It's fun. Like we said before, it's fun to look at. Like,
it's great.
Without over pitching it. If you don't, you're an asshole. So like go buy one.
Okay.
There you go. Support me.
Classic.
Go to the shop. Browse.
Get it all.
Yes.
Awesome. Yeah. Great.
All right. So, well, you have only one thought. You can only leave our listeners with one thought.
One thought. So
and it can be an extended one.
My one thought is something that I always try to challenge people is to fail. Is to find something to, you know, that pushes you, that challenges you, but you know, you might fail. You might fuck up. You might go down a road that's just like, oh, what am I doing? But like at least you tried it, you know? Like, and I feel like that's what I did for my Make Something Cool Every Day project is I was like failing left and right, but I finally figured out what I was wanting to do, and then like that's all I do. So fucking fail.
Yeah.
Man. Fail well harder. Said. Well said. I think that's a sentiment we've echoed.
Oh yeah. Many times. I have a poster out there from Facebook, Fail Harder out there.
There you go.
it's interesting to me to, like, it seems like you and, well, I keep putting you in, like, a class with Brock. Like, I don't know why I do that.
Oh, yeah.
But it's just, like, you both make stuff I really, like, respond to, and you're in Minneapolis. Yep. So yeah, I think that's it. But you know what? That project seems to have, like, had a pretty profound impact on both of you. That makes something cool every day, right?
It was great for me. Like, yeah. I really feel like I was able to experiment and, like, really find, like, what my way of, like, creating things and, like, mm-hmm. you know, making my concepts, like, come to life with. So I think it was a great thing for me. And, you know, if I hadn't have done that, like, I don't know where I would be right now or what I'd be doing. So
totally.
it was great, like, taking that challenge and, you know, possibly failing. So
if I could leave people with one thing, then I think it would be not only fail, I would say commit. You know, committing, you know, committing to 365 days of a project is, like, pretty intense.
Right.
It doesn't have to be, but it, you know.
Yeah.
So I would say, like, you to find your voice, it really takes a lot of failing, a lot of, like, just sucking at stuff, a lot of just figuring out what you don't like in order to figure out what you do like, and just kind of refining that path and pivoting and adjusting. And thank you for, like, wading through that Shawshank, like, mile long pipe.
I made it out of the tunnel, and I am, like, lifting my arms in the air. And it's raining.
The rain is coming down.
Yeah. It's all good.
And there's just a burger on a platter at the end of that day.
Thank you.
I wish that was the scene. They got to the end. There were just, like, five or six burgers just sitting
there.
Shut up.
Because it would be pretty. It wouldn't make any sense.
It would be a soggy burger. It'd be a soggy burger.
It would. Well, David Schwinn, thank you for failing in the past so that you could bring us a lot of, I think, very effectual and very cool work.
And I have no doubt you'll fail in the future.
Thank you guys. Thank you guys so much for having me. No, I plan to. I need to fail more, actually. So yeah. I plan to do that more.
Don't take the safe route, right?
No.
That's right.
Never.
Yeah, and to that point, thank you so much for joining us. It's been a great hour together. We do have, though, one more request for
we
you.
Have our
request. We have a final ask.
Just a little bit of a bow on top.
Yeah. We like to sign off every episode the same way with our own personal mantra of ship it. And we like our guests to kind of buy in and ship us out of the episode.
Yeah. Subscribe to the cult of 10,000.
Yeah, exactly. Cut your palm and shake hands. So if you want to sign us off with a ship it, that would be the highlight of our week.
So you just want me to say that?
Yep.
If you want to. I want you to want to say it.
I want to say it.
Okay.
Ship it. Okay.